is Thomas Hay. I'm a family physician. I've been with the UW for 13 odd years now. I practice at the neighborhood one of the neighborhood clinics over on the east side in Factoria. And for the last 6 years or so, I've also been the associate medical director for the ambulatory services and called the physician services. And that piece of my hat, I've been for a few years been sort of the physician responsible for the conduction of the medical staff satisfaction survey that has sort of evolved over the years and now has had. It used to be that the only UW Medical Center did a medical staff satisfaction survey, and now we've recently adopted a UW medicine-wide effort to try and survey and learn from medical staff in terms of sort of in different areas of satisfaction. So as such, over the years, I've sort of given thought to and worked on this idea that of satisfaction is kind of a interesting word, very subjective, difficult, although we try to measure. And Rick, when did we start talking? I think it's 3 years ago or so.
Probably.
Yeah. Dr. Berger.
A long time ago.
is a urologist who also has had a lot of interest in the area of and he you brought a very interesting perspective to the work, because the truth is before we started interfacing, a lot of clinician medical staff satisfaction work, both what we've been doing at UWMC and as I've been reading about it outside of us, have done a lot about sort of if we made your job easier, maybe more staff, more equipment, more efficiency, however you want to measure that, maybe pay more, maybe. I mean, there's all very sort of somewhat concrete things. If we made that better, promotion criteria, then you'll be more satisfied, And so that's what we had been working on for a number of years. We get the satisfaction survey back, not happy, not happy. And the score really didn't change, actually, several years in a row. Like, okay, well, maybe it's the ER, maybe it's the OR turnover, maybe it's the, clinic schedule. And we would use that and try to sort of turn around and look at some of our process owner folks and administrators and say, how can we make this better? And turn around, resurvey, and got the same thing. It's my analogy is it's kind of like adding a lane to the highway, and it's just like just maybe temporary people feel like, oh, it's a little better, and then something else, right? So, as Dr. Berger started to interface with this group, when we started to realize that a big factor that we hadn't been focusing on is wellness. So health, wellness, and the dark side of that force is the burnout, stress, depression, and sort of a big aha moment. Of course, if somebody is more well, grounded, less burned out, then we all know we signed up for a tough job, right? I mean, this is not an easy job. So you essentially sort of deal with the job in a better way. You interface with your job in a better way. And when people ask, how's it going? How satisfied are you? By and large, people have a different answer in the same environment. So how can we start focusing on that aspect of our medical staff, as opposed to just giving them more tools and the latest gadgets and the faster turnover in the OR and those kind of things? So hence born several of the efforts that I don't know if folks here have attended some of the sessions on noontime meditation, mindfulness-based stress reduction workshops, and so far has been more obviously very voluntary, much like this. Sort of, hey, it's here. Let's talk. And we're continuing to try to figure out what are the ways we can, where are the levers, shall we say, that we can pull on to make this a little more, have a little more momentum. And I was just talking to Kev about this. I, as several of the medical directors, give a pretty much monthly, right, Kev, the onboarding presentation to new medical staff. A few slides and a few minutes is definitely sort of included in that onboarding, sort of getting people inoculated a little earlier to sort of think about this issue of their own wellness as in terms of how it interfaces with patient safety. So
that's kind of my background. Since we have a small group, do you mind if I just sort of go around and kind of get a sense of what people do and what brought you here to this lecture, or this discussion, I want to say? Maybe we'll start here.
I'm Jan Feit, and just last week I decided I'm going to open a practice again. I'm a clinical psychologist on the side. I've been taking the MBSR classes with Rick and Claudia. I'm quite passionate about them. They have changed my life, shifted me tremendously. So I'm quite the proponent of it.
My name is Chris Prenovitz, and Richard kind of heard about me somehow through a colleague, and I also presented a talk here one noon time, and so I really applaud you all in terms, because it's, you're really, you know, it's like a big boat. You know, you're really on the cutting edge of really changing, you know, culture. And so I teach stress reduction, and not the formal mindfulness-based stress reduction. And I actually used to work at Swedish Medical Center teaching people with heart disease. And so I'm here today because a lot of people that I work with in classes or individually, caregiving is a real important issue, and I've worked with nurses and doctors through the years. And, you know, how to bring that quality of care to oneself that you bring to, you know, everyone else is really, I think, what your work is about, and I really support what you're doing. It's well needed. Yeah.
Thank you, Chris.
I'm here to learn, and Tom's given a lot of support to this, and I'm here to appreciate that and to ask him some hard questions.
Your typical MO, Greg.
He's used to that.
I'm Beth Rollinger. I'm an occupational therapist. I work with a curriculum for OT, so I'm here part for my own personal growth and learning, and part to see what kind of things I can pull back for our students to help them get ready to launch into their professional careers.
I'm Stephanie Martin. I'm a social worker in the system in oncology. I've been here about 13 years, and kind of wanting to reclaim the benefits of some of the processes that we're kind of learning with the meditation again that I used to use in the past. And feel like I've lost perspective recently with a lot of the, you know, many bosses, many tasks, trying to keep the patient's first perspective in all the complexity of oncology care, fragmentation of oncology care. So that's my goal. Find the center again.
Yeah.
I'm a patient care coordinator upstairs in general surgery, and even though that may not, it is nowhere near as stressful as being an actual doctor, it still has its moments. You know, the phone's ringing, I have to call this insurance company by the end of the day because surgery's early next week. The doctor comes in to add an urgent case, you know. And so, you know, by the end of the day, you can be a little... And I am currently taking Dr. Berger's class, and I'm not very good at it. but I walk out every Monday with the kids.
You're the best you can be.
Well, I've learned my horses not to say that out loud anymore.
But at least I walk out with at least one thing every class where it's just like, whoa. You know, that I've never thought of before. This just like opens the door. So I totally recommend that class to anybody. My fellow PCCs and PSSs and all that.
Well, I didn't catch your name.
Oh, sorry. Lee Bell.
Thank you, Lee. Kev?
My name is Kev Voorhees. I'm project manager for the Morning Project. Last year. And actually, one of my coworkers in OD&T has been coming to the Friday sessions for the past, well, since the beginning of January. And she couldn't make it today, so I said it's sitting for. Plus, I've heard the elevator pitch for this specific session a couple times from Dr. Head. So.
Can I have one more thing? I really, you know, I felt that mindfulness was really taking off. I just couldn't sense it. I started looking around, it's everywhere. And then I have a friend who lives in Denmark, or is from Denmark. She just recently went, and she said, that's all they're talking about in Denmark. So I guess, you know, it really is sort of an international movement as well. I really think it is the cutting edge, and I think we're only beginning to see how helpful it is in so many ways. So just wanted to add that.
Oh, thank you.
Really
interesting.
Yeah.
Denmark. Who would have thought? So the when I came on to this work of medical staff or clinician satisfaction, it was Tom Steger basically looked at me and goes, hey. Dr. Bentham, Wayne Bentham, is a psychiatrist who used to do that before me when Ed Walker was the medical director. And he got this new big project to do spread out psychiatry counseling services to in New Orleans after Katrina. So he's like, I can't do this anymore. So I kind of got tapped for it. And initially I was like, okay, I don't know why, but okay, I'll try my best. And so I say that just because I don't come here with some sort of, you know, big medals or certificates of expertise, but more just kind of personal experiences, professional interest, and sort of trying to navigate this process through our relatively Byzantine organization, and knowing how important it is. So one incident, I want to say a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, really kind of hit me upside the head for this is there was a radiology faculty at Harborview who committed suicide. And talking to Dr. Beauchamp, who's the chair for radiology department, he was like, yeah, nobody knew. He, you know, reading cases, clinically active, a bunch of accolades, respected by peers, and then happened. So, you know, you're like, clear, obvious tragedy for lots of people involved. But then I started thinking, you know, so I'm a primary care doctor. I order lots of radiology tests, as do lots of doctors around here. And although we, you know, strive to be as sort of smart and, you know, knowledgeable as we can, very, very consistently, you order a test, a report comes back, you go, hey, patient, you have blah, 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 right? Once in a while, I have to say, if I'm going to have a question, I might look at the images myself, but I'm not a trained radiologist. And so, and then you start thinking, well, the quality of the care for that happens after that is really completely dependent on the quality of that report. As a working in a medical director's office, one of our illustrious privileges is also to manage cases and reports of clinicians who may have quality, safety, you know, expertise, knowledge gaps and issues. And sort of knowing that side, and you're thinking, wow, so this person was, you know, clinically active, reading reports. You just, it raises the question, right? I mean, how many potential, we don't know, safety implications might have emanated from that one person who was clearly not well.
And that also brought to me a different perspective whenever I do at times get involved and adjudicate, you know, reports and complaints about med staff sort of acting badly, instead of just, you know, slap on the arm or something. It's how, why are they doing that? How are they doing what's under that whole thing? And started paying attention to that. So that's one. Another more sort of a personal experience was a year or so ago. Around Christmas, my 8-year-old nephew died of leukemia. And so it was a big deal for the family, for myself, and I have an 8-year-old as well, you know, like 2 months apart. And again, that happened, you know, like lots of families, it's sad, it's tragic, we all sort of get together and try to grieve together. But again, having done some of this work, I started paying attention to my own thought processes when I'm seeing patients. And for a period afterwards, I thought, you know, I have to think a little harder. I have to find myself just kind of having to pay that little extra vigilance to feel like I'm on my game. And I don't know how many people are aware of that. Direct caregivers are actually aware that when they're internally, you know, not well and having struggling with certain things, how aware are they that it actually comes out in what we do, how we do it? And nowadays, in spite of all the, you know, various checks, some degree of checks and balances and measures, you know, I get measured on my how well I take care of my diabetics and how well their labs do. And a lot of what we do is assumed to be good, right? Patients assume we're good. We see that in our good as in medically. You know, we see that in over and over again in sort of our patient satisfaction surveys about us. As you know, they rank high those folks they perceive to care about them, and not much is given to, you know, I got better. Yeah, I'm supposed to get better. So everybody could make me better. Did you care about me? And we know that, and trying to get a lot of our care team and medical staff to focus on the caring part of healthcare. There was a recent interview I heard on NPR for the doctor who's Dalai Lama's doctor, and they talk about how they. At times, you know, the Dalai Lama needs to see a doctor, and they interview doctors to see, you know, His Holiness and all that. And then he made this statement, was very, it really stuck with me. He said, you know, there's health and there's wellness. You know, health is all the various, you know, drugs they give in oncology and the various intervals of infusions and drugs I prescribe and labs I do and how I interpret them. But then, who's paying attention to how well they feel? Right? Not just the pain got relieved, just I felt cared for. And so, anyway, it's sort of chicken and the egg. So much of this is, you know, if we do well for ourselves, we do well for others, and in this big circle of things, others see us doing well. And many of us in this caring profession, you know, I think put a significant amount of weight to that. And if people feel like we're helping them, we feel better. And so it's a chicken and the egg thing. So that's what I bring to this. Back to this sort of trying to figure out how we can do better for a larger group of us and thereby our patients. It has been a very challenging endeavor. It's great that we got started. And what I told Rick recently was, okay, got to keep going. You know, whatever we need to do, need to figure out a way for this pilot, because that's how it was sort of billed as, and kind of went through this funding process that was supposed to be kind of a one-timer and that kind of thing. So how do we make this, keep this going? Because now that it's here, for those of you who've, you know, participated and taken advantage, and we are at least at the point of the sort of the early adopter, you know, that part of the bell-shaped curve on the right where you're just like, okay, we have got started. But the fat part of that curve where many people live, most people live, right, statistically 95% of people live, we need to figure out a way to sort of bring this out broader. The hard thing, of course, when it comes to wellness, and in those of you who are in mental health circles, and I'd say a good part of primary care is that as well, it's hard to even bring the horse to the water, to say nothing about making the horse drink the water, right? And then, in this healthcare profession, where it's the MO or our ethos is about caring for others, about doing better, you know, giving of ourselves to help others, and you know, hone my skills so that I can, you know, I can be perceived at least to be, you know, the best in whatever, fill in the blank. It's really, really hard to pierce through that and get people to come to open themselves, really, and admit to needing this piece of skill or awareness, and then as a way that they can be better still. So, you know, how do you navigate that in our medical staff structure, departmental faculty structure, and the like? It's been an interesting question. I don't think that the only solace I take in that process, though, is I don't think anybody's figured it out. So I probably can't do it wrong. We can try something, and this is, you know, it's not like I went against some rule. It's just there's no rule. We should probably just try something. So we're still in a lot of discussions about that. So that's a lot of some of my sort of perceptions and experiences and perspective. I wonder if anybody in the audience might want to sort of reflect on that and share.
I would just say I work in an area where we have a residency program, and it seems to me that would be an advantageous point to introduce the values and benefits before the people get locked into all the responsibilities and physical and physical realities of, you know, say the space they work in.
Absolutely. One could even push it a little further and think about medical school. I mean, thinking back on my own experience of medical school and residency, you're right, there was, you know, this was not at all talked about. The perception, both on the, I mean, I can't really speak for the faculty, but now that I'm one of them, I guess I can feel that as something with that pressure, and then on the certainly on the learners, is that I've got to get the technical healthcare part of it, you know, right first. There's that sense that you got to learn what this drug does and how to do the operation, and you know, what's the pathophysiology of X, and then you got to sort of like drill that before you quote worry about the other stuff. It was interesting because, again, reflecting back very early on, probably even before, while I was applying to medical school, so it's really in undergraduate times, I found myself more interested in reading books and things about sort of the art and the reflections of medicine as a sort of a caring experience than, you know, sarcoid or sarcoidosis and the pathophysiology of that. So I guess in some respects, sort of how things worked out naturally, I found this work to be very, very interesting, and here I am. But really, if you sort of break down the time and the days, and it's hard to figure out how we change that bigger system and wedge it in there. You know, resident work hours, right? I mean, nowadays it's like dictated from the tablets of Moses kind of thing. It's like, you thou shall, and you're literally squeezing out minutes out of their day as opposed to, you know, finding sort of hour-long blocks. A lot of that, the truth is, a lot of that is obviously their excuses and reasons, but we just need to continue to sort of find ways to influence influential people, right? Mm-hmm. It is starting, you know. I mentioned Dr. Beauchamp. Norm Beauchamp is a friend, but a very influential radiology department chair. He and a few others, Dr. Phu Tran is the otolaryngology chair. They have themselves taken interest in this work. So far has been more faculty, medical staff side, but Stephanie, totally. I mean, if you get them early, right? That's why the onboarding presentations and making mentions of this. Somehow, if we get them a little early, not to like probably to teach them the whole, you know, MBSR.
But experience, of course, people are modeling themselves after mentors they admire. So it seems to me by demonstration that's part of.
Yeah, there really is that. It goes both ways, right? You know, we can teach the youngins, but then if all they see are, you know, people who burn it on both sides in the middle, and they feel like that is the model of success and a good doctor, a great surgeon, you know.
I'm teaching a mind-body skills course, and I don't know if you've had that one, but it's for medical students, graduate nurses, and it's a small group of 8 to 10, and I'm just loving it. But what I'm finding is those who would be most apt to be empathic and caring are wondering if they made the right decision. We're catching them early, but they're not sure they want to do this. They're not sure they want to go through the meat grinder and lose the reason they went into medicine. So I think, too, there has to be some kind of reframing or shift that you're going to be able to hang on to yourself through this and be the caring person mm-hmm. you are and not, you know, just go through the meat grinder. So I think,
yeah. Yeah, kind of two questions.
Sure.
And there's incredible socialization. By the time people get out, they're incredibly distorted from where they went in.
Yeah.
And that needs to be addressed after that, too, because that...
All along the way.
But given all the information there is about the relationship of burnout, depression, to quality of patient care, hospital stay, patient satisfaction, number of mistakes, medication errors that are made... Why don't people see that it's in the interest of patient care? And my second question is a little different than that, but there have been 4 deaths in the past 2 years, suicides at least that I know about. If there were 4 patients died of, you know, there would be a huge amount of stuff going on, it's just denied. So, I mean, to me, it's a no-brainer. You make people go to lots of classes. You get a menu of things that would fit different personality types, and you say you spend so many hours, going to these things, just like you have to spend on so many quality control or documentation lectures. You know, the models. There, the reasons are all there. What's the barrier?
The barriers. That's the analogy of the big ship thing. You know, it's how we've always steered the ship in the direction we've been going. And you smack a couple of small icebergs here and there. It didn't sink the ship, so you kind of feel like you can just keep going. You know, the patient safety angle is completely right on. You know, I mean, that really has been the most compelling argument to at least gotten us this far. You know, you might wonder, given, you know, sense how sort of common sense and intuitive this idea should be, especially for, I'm hoping, it, you know, again, sort of the larger healthcare community, we also are generally sort of caring people on average. Like, why did it take this long, right? Because I think the reason is I think up to now it's been looking at a nurse or a doctor who, you know, you think they may not be doing so well, and you're trying to say get to them, you're not doing well, and we need to get you to do better, feel better. There's something wrong with you. You made these mistakes that we found, or you know, this patient injury, and something wrong with you. And that's been the environment for a long time. For a long time of practicing and residency, it's about trying not to make a mistake. It's about, something's wrong with me, right? And we're all human, so we all know, right, in this room that mistakes happen. But then it's, you know, the reflex is, I don't want there to be perception to be wrong, something wrong about me, or even the larger organization, like a team, you know. Something's wrong with our process. Ooh, you know, who wants to admit that? But even as far as we've gotten, which is not far by my estimates, but at least we've gotten started as far as we have, whereas over the years it's not at all even been really talked about, has been this, again, influential people that we've been able to influence to say, you know, if we don't try and catch people before they make the mistake, that's what we've been focusing on, we're just sort of tamping out fires, you know, and then suddenly if we miss one and they burn out and they commit suicide, you know, heaven forbid. So, again, I go back to that. It's sort of influencing the right influential people, and so much of my job on the medical director side, well, maybe even as a doctor, it's about influencing people, and so that's what I see in terms of how we continue to go about this. There's the sort of the nuts and bolts of, you know, whose budget should we put this onto, and this and that, you know, that we're certainly working on. But in terms of really sort of paradigm shift and making it kind of a course of doing business and a course of obvious part of medical education, you come from all kinds of backgrounds, and if you're going to go on this path, this track, then one of the things, you sit them down and you say, this 2 weeks, whatever the curriculum is, we're going to focus on your wellness and how it affects patients. Mm-hmm. Right. Yes?
What I'll be saying is really, in some ways, is a not anything to do with the structure of an organization, but really from my own personal experience in working with people, is, and your comment about, getting people of places of influence is really important. And one of the things I think also that draws us individually and is the pain. Something is not right. And that's what it can be very motivating. I mean, I first have been doing these practices for many years, and I started in graduate school as a social worker. I was like really stressed out. And it was out of my own, you know, something's wrong here, that I really got involved in yoga and meditation, and it's just been part of my path. And all through the years when I work with people, often it's through their own pain. And so when you were talking about how to change the culture, And it was so intellectual. We're always like, you know, and especially in this kind of environment. But it's really on a deeper level of that human connection and where there's wisdom. And so making decisions, even like framing it, that, you know, it's not just figuring out the pieces of the puzzle, but there's many different ways of accessing this connection and healing. And so a couple of things, you know, for example, I worked in this Dean Owners Program for reversing heart disease. How it actually, they did research and all that, how it actually was rolled out was there was a chairman of an insurance company had a severe heart attack, and he was like, I gotta find something. And so he went and he got this into this program. He says, you gotta roll it out. I want this to be covered. And so it, and now it's covered by Medicare, you know. So it really is, and it's how do we connect with people of influence, it's just as people. Because it's really, I think, fear and isolation that really is what, because we have to look good, and that's stressful, right? That's stressful. So it's like, how can we have a culture or a subculture where it's okay to share your humanity?
No, absolutely. You mentioned sort of, especially in this environment, you know, in an academic medical center, you know, many of the people we rub shoulders with are like, you know, God's gifts to blank, right? Mm-hmm. And people look up to them and say, wow, you know, that's maybe one day I will kind of thing. And it's, they got there through a certain path. And how many of them might be able to sort of admit to their degree of humanity and say, yeah, you know, that's really rough to travel everywhere and you know, might sound all glamorous being invited to all these, you know, conventions and specialty boards, but really, you know, I never get to see my family and all those things. It's how, you know, getting influential people to model, you know, the behavior of admitting that, you know, it's not easy, you know. There was a year ago or so, there was a surgery grand rounds that was organized by Dr. Pellegrini, who's the chair of surgery, on surgeon specifically, sort of burnout and some data on safety and the rest, and there was like, you know, a big audience of surgeons and residents and probably some medical students doing surgery rotation. Good start. You know, I was there. It was still very sort of, you know, here are the data, here's the last study, and because of that you should pay attention. But there was there wasn't Dr. Pellegrini saying, you know, when I was this and that, sort of humanizing, personalizing it so that people can sort of understand that, you know, this person who maybe I aspire to be one day is struggling just like, have struggled just like I am. Mm-hmm. And being able to ask for what guidance and where to go with that feeling. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think programmatically we need to, at minimum, need to have something for the folks who need or willing and want to take advantage. So that's like, at a minimum, we need that. And it's really kind of getting beyond that big curtain of folks who are like, if you give them truth serum, they might admit to they needing it, but then on the outside, they're like, no, I'm fine. Why is there a problem? You know, did I do something wrong that you have to talk to me about stress reduction? That's a tough veil to pierce.
But as long as we're, you know, as long as we're alive, there's stress. I mean, that's, you know, and there's how to work with that, you know. So it's, but I can really empathize with, you know, with kind of cutting through the brick.
But I think you know, Rick, you mentioned the patient safety angle, and I find myself always asking that question now. You know, something, you know, not quite top-notch quality and safety happen, and I'm involved in the review of that. It's sort of asking that question all the time. And then the other one that we have an interesting opportunity to sort of utilize is also the patient satisfaction, patient safety and patient satisfaction angle momentum. Because there's this UW Medicine-wide sort of focus on improving patient satisfaction. For a lot of reasons, I think it's, you want patients to feel like you did good and feel satisfied with what you did, but also they're getting down to sort of brass tacks that, you know, it's going to be sort of published, publicly available, you know, a percentage of your CMS reimbursement will be dependent on how you do there. I mean, you know, I don't think we're, I'm not such an optimist to think that we're doing this just because we want to do good. I mean, the truth is, so some of our administrators want to do this because they don't want to lose money, and right, and which is okay, right? This is all right. No mission, no margin. But anyway, in this very close connections with, you know, how I feel or how well the caregiver is doing, it affects how much they give of themselves, right? And my own personal, having lived through for a period of some fairly high stress, I was like, you know, it's a conscious effort to kind of sit down and be very sort of in the moment and caring for a patient when I'm not feeling so great. It's the classic, you know, when people get drunk and drink a lot of coffee, they're like an awake drunk, they still can't think well, right? So it's kind of like that. It's like, I'm there, but
You know, I don't think we have any training in serial caring, with what you say, because we see one patient after another, right? I have to be present, care, actually take in what this person into me, to be compassionate, you know, and there it sits, right? So now I go get another patient. Same thing, you know, and it's serial pain, right? But we have absolutely no training in letting go of that, you know, and say, you know, and not only opening your heart, but letting it go out your back, kind of thing. And, you know, so how do you take care of that and be present for that patient? Most people aren't present. I mean, I was just sitting through doctor's appointments with my wife the other day, and the person was obviously not there, you know.
What keeps going through my mind is we used to take a cigarette break. You know, people would just try to get some relief from something, so they go have a cigarette. Well, why can't we turn that around and have a wellness break, you know? How long it takes to smoke a cigarette, be a big campaign, you know, a wellness break instead of a cigarette break. We don't even think in terms of making space for something. You know, there's no space for
us. Well, this aren't supposed to bother you, see. So so you start denying all this stuff, and you build up such great defenses that you say, well, mindfulness, you know, and you see yourself falling apart, you know.
Falling apart, yeah.
At the end of this, because you give up these defenses, which ultimately kind of destroy you, I think.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a great fear of giving those up or even addressing them, admitting that they're, that they're there.
Just totally melt.
We're fine. We're fine. Yeah. We're...
I've had occasion, just because of my relationship with the physicians I work with over the years, and I have to be careful here not to say anything that would identify someone, but I've had people come to me and feel it was safe because I was the mental health person on the team, and share, they were fearful of letting a health issue be known to their colleagues because they knew any sign of weakness meant a loss of prestige or position or some delicate discussion that was going on. And I've also witnessed when someone did reveal, you know, which I guess was perceived by their colleagues as weakness, an illness they had no control over, or some other issues that might come up, that really
their experience was the jackals gathered. They start thinking about who they're going to replace them with. Well, if you and talking openly about it, so that it was.
Oh yeah.
So you know, it's a pretty fearful thing to show what might be perceived.
I can't tell you how many times I get every winter. I get the question from multiple physicians and medical staff. Hey, that illness policy, clarify that for me. What if I have cough but no fever, and can I just come to work? You know, that's just one of the symptoms there.
You don't want
you don't want anybody to. Yeah.
Any sign of anything that can be used.
Right, Lee, you had your hand.
Oh, well, if you don't mind, I'd like to give an instance from a patient perspective of what it means for your provider to be there.
Yeah.
Dr. Mary Lay is my primary care doctor. She's fabulous. And about 3 years ago, I was in for my annual. And everything's fine. It's okay, that okay. Yeah. And I'm sitting down, and she's writing out the lab slip for the cholesterol and all that stuff. And all of a sudden, she stops. And she looks at me, and she says, "Are you sure you're okay?" And that question might have saved my life. Because I said, no. Yeah. Just the fact that she just said something was wrong and said, "Are you sure you're okay?" Mm-hmm. And she could have just said, "Yeah, okay, have a laugh, we'll let you know, goodbye." And she didn't. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. Being there for the patient is so important.
And no, I've worked with Mary over the years, and she's absolutely terrific. And you know, put yourself in her shoes, though. If she's thinking about, you know, the 20 results in her women basket she hasn't sent out, and charts she hasn't closed, and you know.
Oh, no, I mean, the fact that she could take that moment with me with all the millions of things she has to do is just phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. Well, right. But, so, but yeah, I think serial caring. I'm gonna have to hold on to that one. That's a good one.
Well, right now, the medical system is built to punish taking that moment because people's productivities are
we're not
so related
awarded,
to profits. Right. And if you don't see the next person in the time, if you go over a little bit, then you're being punished for it. And there's the profits. And they need that efficiency for the product, not for the
it's
parents.
Perceived that way. Actually, Larry Moss, when he gave his talk, actually had been measured, you know, the amount of time it takes. Yeah. And the problem with if the doctor's not there, and I've been aware of this, but I've not been there, is you know, oh, doc, one more thing.
Yeah.
And by the way. By the way. It takes more time.
Yeah.
That if you actually try to address, you know, ask, is there anything else, you know, do you understand, a few simple questions, you know, does that make sense to you, what we're doing, do you buy into this, you know, stuff like that. It doesn't take long, and it actually is quicker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I was lucky that, again, I can't remember time anymore, but some few years back there was a effort, at least at the neighborhood primary care clinics, of going through this, it's called agenda setting. You know, they kind of put that in the context of time management. So you don't want an issue, by the way, I've been having crushing chest pain, to come up with your hands on the doorknob. Like, you sit down and you say, let's make a list of things that you want to talk about. And sort of treating every visit like a meeting, have an agenda, and then make sure you have enough time, and maybe you don't have to plan for that, maybe you don't in those curves that scenario. And that's very interesting. No, I mean, you're right about the risk and the rewards. You know, you talked about the cigarette break. I had two straight days of clinic, Wednesday and Thursday. I had a procedure morning, and you know, in between procedures, I was like answering telephone messages. I was, you know, reading through, you know, papers and filling out forms and signing PT reorders And so I'm sort of trying to conceptualize this break. I'm like, how do I do that? The little sort of flicker of light that I see in this whole thing, and back to this organizational focus on patient satisfaction, and you know, being reported. I have numbers on every, you know, physician in this hospital. Some of them are small N because I don't see that many patients, but, you know, I got numbers, basically, and we're talking to people about it and all that, is that I'm hoping that this becomes a currency in a sense that, you know, we pay you and we, you know, we have you block OR block time and, you know, clinic space and all this. But also, by the way, here are your satisfaction results. And if you tanked, you know, not so great, let's talk about how we can make them better. Now, you know, anything in the extreme is never, you know, doesn't, it never makes sense. And I'm not saying you only see one patient an hour so you can devote all your energy and have like a, you know, after visit, you know, calming down or anything like that. You know, we can't take care of patients that way. But on the other hand, how do we, you know, manage that piece of it? And hoping that that sort of, again, there's value in that, so we, you know, put some put some hard value. Maybe not the hard value is, again, I find it interesting sometimes. I work in the neighborhood clinic, you know, structure clinically, and I come here and then this other, so I have sort of foot in both sides, and I compare and contrast. The neighborhood clinic, I don't know how many of you know, it's been around for about 13, 14 years. It's actually operated by a separate nonprofit that, yeah, it's not part of UWMC or Harborview. It's not a hospital-owned entity. Very tightly connected, all part of UW Medicine, but not, you know, direct. So as such, there's a little bit of space for doing things differently. And so there's been 2 quarters now, a piece of our productivity reimbursement or compensation is tied to achieving a certain number on our patient satisfaction scores. So Meg Kerrigan is the executive director for that entity, said, do you know Meg? So Meg sort of said, you know, let's put some sort of like hard value on that so that... And how, you know, so that people don't feel like they're, you know, that the rewards are just basically, you know, churn it, you know, fill out the lab, see you next, you know, get rewarded that way as opposed to, you know, you saying how well I'm doing, basically, which we all should care, but sometimes there's lots of things to care about to balance out.
Well, that's very good. The administration also cares, so that...
Mm-hmm.
That's
right.
Very supportive. It's a very supportive message. You give a hard reinforcer for doing that piece of that.
Right, right. You know, interesting. You'll see those of us who have historically really paid attention to that. I would count myself as one of those people. Kind of go, okay, right. No skin off my back. It's what I do. You know, I've seen my scores. They're generally pretty good. I'm good. And you see some people like, wait, but what if my N is this many? What about validity? What about arguing? It's like, this is what we're going to do. This is what we're going to do. Let me see how I can help you do better. Right? So, but yeah, so all those sort of, I don't know, discussions or battles, whatever you want to call it, I mean, all those need to be had because this is not a system where we can easily turn on a dime and everybody goes, oh, we're turning this direction. Right. So, anyway. Any other thoughts?
Are you looking at any kind of, I don't know, I'm taking a class too, but are you looking at any kind of comments following the class for feedback on how it might be impacting physicians? Attendance, or
was
that not taken?
There is an evaluation at the end, which I turned in the results from the last one, mainly there were just the comments. I think were the most useful.
There was something of use that you could tie to.
Yeah, Tom has those. You know, I don't know, but probably my guess is if it's like most things, if enough people make noise, it may have an impact. At least the next group of people that make the noise may have, you know, something may be done if it keeps happening. So,
yeah, no, so I'm a big believer in the power of stories. And so it's, you know, the truth is it's hard. People want data. They want numbers. They want all, you know, pre-intervention, post-intervention, and da-da-da-da-da. But ultimately, to change people and how they believe in, you know, their belief system and paradigm, it's really sort of getting to them with the right feedback from a sort of a subjective, you know, storytelling kind of a way. You know, there's just certain things in life that you don't wait for the numbers to come in. You just sort of say, this just feels like it's the right thing to do. And we just need to find out the right, you know, the right story, the right buttons and the levers to get to so that we can continue to move the momentum. So for me, I'm sort of cultivating the discussions with the clinical department chairs. I mean, eventually, I think if we get to a, there's, I'm sort of thinking now more didactically, I'm thinking, you know, well, there's a clinical chairs meeting that's run by Dr. Ramsey and Dr. Robinson. So I'm thinking, that's like, you know, so how do we get on a topic to that group and sort of pushing the right buttons? So these are my schemings. Anything more from the group?
I think it's also helpful to get back to the medical schools or the high schools to plant seeds there, so as some of us die off, the younger folks say, well, where's that? And of course, and I'm willing to accept them all because there will be a generational shift with this, enough seeds for that.
Yeah. Yeah. All hands on deck. Absolutely. Well, great. Thanks, everybody. So my email is just THEI, you know, and the rest. So if you want to reach out, let me know. If you have any other feedback or ideas, I'm all yours. Thanks, everybody.
So is May 14th
Victoria? Well, May.
It was a holiday.
Right. Yes. Right.